Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. November the 7th, 2014. Winter is breathing down our necks. Goodness gracious, the year is almost over. Hard to imagine Election Day in our rearview mirror. So much going on, so much to talk about. But first and foremost, I want to thank you so much for joining me at the end of the week to play that infamous game of catch-up. Pardon me. For those of you who are familiar with me, you know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. It used to be under the Justice Department. DHS has enveloped the component agencies of Immigration, Customs, and a host of other law enforcement agencies, supposedly to carry on the missions of enforcing our immigration laws, securing our borders. And if you believe that that's what's happening today, I got a fence to sell you. I want to start out by reminding you about a couple of really great websites I would like you to go visit. First of all, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. Also, for many years, I have been affiliated very proudly with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, on the West Coast. And gosh, that climate, that part of the country seems ever more appealing as November rolls around. And their website is capsweb.org. I also write for Progressives for Immigration Reform, have an article up with them, and I'm a columnist for Front Page Magazine. But before we get any further along, I want to welcome our very special guest this evening, retired Army Major General Paul Vallely. Paul and I met at an event in South Carolina, the Tea Party Convention. I expect to be back there this January again. He has served our country incredibly well, incredibly loyally, has been also a person that was the go-to guy, the senior military advisor to Fox News for a bunch of years. So I'm honored to have him as a guest, and I'm also honored to be able to call General Vallely a personal friend. General Vallely, happy Friday. Thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Thank you, Michael, for having me back on again. It's a pleasure.
We live in interesting times, as the Chinese curse says, don't we?
Well, very interesting and challenging times. The ultimate challenge, restoring America.
And surviving the process. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Where do we begin? Would you like to jump into this mess with Iran and the letters that supposedly were or were not sent, depending on what foolishness we're looking at?
Well, I think that's exactly what it is. It's foolishness of a very inept national security team, including the White House national security team, the CIA, the State Department. I've never seen more inept individuals in my life in the executive branch. And it starts
from the top. Is it fair to say that the uniform of the day are floppy shoes and a big rubber nose?
Well, I'll tell you what, they're so deceiving. I mean, not only do they deceive everybody outside the United States, but they deceive Congress, they deceive the American people. It's just constant deception and ineptness every week, it appears. And to think that you can appease and send a letter to Khomeini in Iran, and that he's going to fall hook, line, and sinker for it. Iran is now the hegemonic power of the Middle East. There's no doubt about that. They rule and control. They drive everything. They know what they're doing. They're smart. They're expanding their military capability, expanding their support of terrorism throughout the world, trying to destabilize Gaza, as well as the West Bank and Hezbollah of the north in Lebanon, who they support to over $300 million a year.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, anyhow, so there you have the Middle East, which I wouldn't shed another drop of blood in the Middle East if I was I was the president. I would.
But yet they say that more troops are headed there now.
That's correct.
What's the game
plan?
I mean,
does this
not remind you a little bit of Neville Chamberlain and Adolf Hitler?
Well, Adolf Hitler was a pretty clever individual, you know, until he was defeated. You know, it's the
but
same
I mean,
thing
Chamberlain,
with,
this idea of appeasement, that almost sounds like we're going down that same.
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean. The appeasement between Chamberlain and Hitler.
Yes, exactly.
And Nazis. Yeah, no, I got you. No, I mean, it's exactly right. You can't appease these people. They have a destiny to fulfill. They have an end game. We don't appear to have any end game, and we haven't had an end game in the Middle East since the fall of, October, November of 2001 in Afghanistan, when we went in and basically decimated the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in 34 days with 100 special ops and CIA paramilitary and air power. You know, it's like I was warned years ago by a Lebanese colonel that said, do not put any bases into the Middle East. He said, the Middle East is like a giant sponge. It will soak up every bit of human resource you put in there, as well as financial resources. And I'll tell you what, he's been right on.
So, you know, the question kids always ask on a trip is, are we there yet? What destination does this administration have? Do they even know when they're there? Where's there?
No, they don't. They don't know. And Susan Rice is about as inept as can be. She continues to stumble every time she attempts to do anything. But the driving force, we know, is the Iranian appeaser, Valerie Jarrett, who has a background, of course, you know, in Iran. Very sympathetic. So Valerie Jarrett, I mean, Obama doesn't go to the bathroom without asking Valerie Jarrett, believe me.
That's incredible. So what must our friends in Israel, I when I say friends about Saudi Arabia, my tongue is firmly embedded in my cheek. I don't know if a crowbar can get it out. But when I look at Israel, I mean, they're looking at a country in Iran that poses an immediate existential threat to their very survival. What in the world must they be thinking when they see all this nonsense going on?
Well, I think when you analyze, and of course I've been into Israel and many times, but I can't understand why Netanyahu is not pulling the trigger. I mean,
do you think it's too big a challenge for even the Israelis?
No. They're so dominant in air power and tactics and strategy over the Iranians. You know, they've set the 75 targets or so in Iran. Basically on a 72-hour air power attack, offensive operation. They know where to attack. They know with their lead aircraft they have electronic countermeasure capability. They basically can zap with laser type of equipment, pewter systems, block the command and control systems that control the armed forces, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And so they've thought it all out. I mean, they can do it. Plus, you know, Israel's been very smart to put some of its assets in the sea, which they didn't do before, with new Dolphin submarines they've received from Germany. So Israel's prepared, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the information I get, Iran already has a nuclear capability. The rockets
really?
Have been tested in North Korea. The launch systems have been tested in North Korea, because every time North Korea sets something off, they have Iranian observers over there, and North Koreans have been in Syria as well as in Iran. So I don't
buy
this.
You believe that those nuclear tests that North Korea carried out were actually Iranian weapons?
No, they were North Korean weapons. But they test them over there because Iran can't test.
I understand
a nuclear type. Yeah.
No. I understand.
So
what I'm saying is
technology.
So then, in other words, they're sharing completely, so that whatever capability North Korea has, Iran has.
Absolutely. It's all been demonstrated.
And
now,
this is what we're negotiating
that,
with.
Ron has to do is screw the nuclear warhead onto the launch system, which is basically a Shahab missile system. So all of those things have been tested by North Korea to the advantage of Iran being able to move forward with their nuclear capability without actually having to do a rocket test.
So what do you think would be inhibiting them?
It's a leadership decision. They know that Israel has the capability, as well as the United States and others, to nuke Iran back to the Stone Ages. And so that's why leaders are very reluctant to launch any kind of nuclear weapons.
It sounds like the old MAD strategy, mutually assured destruction.
Exactly. That's what it is. Yeah, that's what's told. But Netanyahu, who has, of course, a nuclear and a conventional capability, they've targeted. They know the aircraft. They have a refueling capability now. So it just, I think it's beyond anybody doing anything about Iran. I think they have the nuclear capability. They'll continue to pursue their persevere their interest in supporting Syria. They've done nothing against ISIS, as you know. They put three battalions into Iraq. Iraq is controlled by Iran. And by us adding more troops over there and trying to appease Iran, it's a mess. That's why with this leadership and national security team, Michael, I would not shed one drop of American blood in the Middle East.
I mean, this is really a hell of a picture you're painting. Where do we go from here?
Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so.
So where should America go from here?
The United States has got to replace the national security team. These people should be fired. Obama needs to be removed. I mean, he is self-destructing. He's causing a national suicide. But, you know, the Republicans, even with the new ones in Congress, are not going to pursue impeachment. I believe that he's guilty of aiding and abetting the enemy, which is the Muslim Brotherhood. He's done that in Egypt. He's done it in Libya. He's done it in Syria. So,
I mean, this is astonishing. And yet, you know, if you listen to the Congress, and they're still talking about comprehensive reform, they're utterly ignoring the findings of the 9/11 Commission. And, you know, you and I have had these conversations on the air and off the air in the past. I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. How could anybody in Congress seriously talk about immigration, giving identity documents to millions of people who snuck in? You know, it's remarkable. I was on a conservative radio show this morning. Bobby Gunther Walsh has me on every other week in Pennsylvania. I'm thrilled to do his show. And he startled me. I don't know if you heard it, but he surprised me. Chris Matthews over at MSNBC went off on a rip about the madness of providing illegal aliens with lawful status. And he didn't get into the national security implication. For me, there's a real serious national security component as well as an economic and societal component to all this. But the idea of giving millions of people identity documents, and we know there are Iranian shock troops in growing numbers in Latin America, what would prevent them from coming across the border, having Mohammed take on the identity of Miguel, and then embedding themselves in our country? And I'm sure some of them have done that already.
They have. In fact, Duncan Hunter released some information that they've already have the intelligence of ISIS forces crossing over the border. But like you've said, too, the border's not only Mexico, it's Canada. It's our airports, it's our seaports, and we're not prepared because we really are at war. But even the people in Congress are going to, I think even the Republicans, thank goodness we had that election, turned out to be, hopefully, positive. But I think, you know, individuals like even Boehner and Mitch McConnell, they think it's politics as usual. I don't think they really realize and understand that America is committing national suicide and that we're at war now to restore the republic and restore America.
And you know what's astonishing? We are training Iranian engineers in the United States. We're training Russian and Chinese computer programmers. And there was a news bulletin yesterday, and they're continuing to cover it, that our computers have been hacked by Russia, maybe by China. And we're training the people that want to undermine our computer networks. We're doing everything in our power to undermine our own safety and well-being.
Have you been into San Jose, California recently?
No.
The heart of Silicon Valley? It's like a foreign world down there.
And that's where they all come in.
They buy the companies. They train their people there. They take that technology, go back to China, India, and other places. And we are a breeding ground for the rest of the world taking advantage of U.S. technology.
What I don't understand is why we even still have factories in China. These aren't our allies. I mean, I know we keep talking about
cheap labor.
Trading partners.
It's cheap labor, that's all.
I understand.
But at the end of the day, it's all about money.
Yeah, but you know what? That's short term, because if they have no respect for intellectual property rights, and they don't, they're going to ultimately supplant the American companies by producing their own stuff even more cheaply and undercut us and put American companies out of business. This is just a short-term solution. This is like buying an expensive car. You buy a Ferrari and decide to save money by not bothering with maintenance. And then when the engine seizes up, what's the price you pay then?
Well, unfortunately, we've given up so much technology. But fortunately, the entrepreneurship of the world still lies in the United States. And it's our creativity and... even our economy now, if it wasn't for the private sector, we wouldn't even have an economy now. And even though Obama wants to take credit for it, he's done nothing to assist and help the economy. In fact, he's restricted the growth. I think the numbers coming out of Washington are factual, are not factual numbers.
And then, you know, the new buzz term, I'm sure you're familiar with it, is income equality. And I laugh because they couple that with raising minimum wage. And I know you're a conservative and I'm not. I actually favor raising minimum wage, and that's, a debate for another day. But here's my point.
Well, conservative doesn't mean anything anymore.
No.
What's conservative mean? I can't define it anymore. I mean, I define it now better to be an American first and what we stand for with our Constitution.
I agree. Paul, you know I've made that point every time I've gone out there.
Yeah.
No, I agree. But here was the point
I was making. Liberalism has gone to communism in this country.
It's gone to
socialism and communism, the communist light, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, no, they've absolutely fallen off the edge, period. But here's the point. That they're convincing people that $15 an hour minimum wage is about wage equality, and you have to almost laugh at the naivete and the stupidity of people that are buying this. You have Bill Gates and Zuckerberg and the others from Silicon Valley who are worth tens of billions of dollars. They make God knows how many millions of dollars per day on their investments, and we're selling people this notion that a $15 an hour minimum wage represents meaningful wage equality. I mean, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life, but what's even crazier is that there are people believing this. This is as dopey as not only selling people the pet rock, but coming back a year later and selling them the training manual for the pet rock.
Well, I guarantee you go to Microsoft or Google or any of those firms, Facebook, they're not paying minimum wage to anybody. They're paying way above market to get the people that they want in there.
Except from India. What they're doing now is they're bringing in people from India. That's why the push for the H-1Bs, because they know they can get a programmer out of India for $50,000 a year, where an American would expect more than $100,000 a year. And I think
$50,000 is not bad.
Well, it's all relative.
That's more than minimum wage.
Oh, yeah, but that's why immigration isn't just about minimum wage.
No, it's not. It's about coming here and getting the education and earning good money and going back. I mean, if I was an Indian, I'd come over here to work, too.
Oh, I don't blame them. I blame us for allowing this nonsense to happen.
Yeah,
look,
exactly.
if you could go to Canada and do a job that would pay $50,000 here and get $300,000 over there, you'd be a darn fool not to go to Canada.
Sure. Well, I'm less worried about that than I am radical jihadis coming into this country.
Oh, absolutely.
That's really the primary reason that we have to look at securing our borders, putting in a no-go zone 20 kilometers south of the border, which I've recommended for years, and that we use our active military capability. Anybody coming into the no-go zone is basically up for being neutralized by our active forces.
We need to end the visa waiver program. They're finally taking a step that I recommended to some of my friends on Capitol Hill. I said, with all these questions they're asking people coming from the Ebola-riddled countries, why aren't we doing that with people who come here under the visa waiver? Get that second address. Get that alias. Get that phone number. Find out who paid for the airplane tickets. So now they are actually doing that. But again, why not simply require visas, and that gives us an extra layer of security? And the answer is simple. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, partnering with corporations, especially in the travel, hotel, hospitality industries, they want those borders taken down so they can make more money. And it seems as though even where they're willing to risk American lives, looking at American lives as collateral damage to their need for profit.
Well, it's almost beyond repair, Michael. I'm not confident that Congress or our government are going to solve the border problem. I'm just not confident they're going to go ahead. I think we're going to continue to see national suicide here. I would like to think that the new Congress, the new House of Representatives, the new Senate would take strong action. I hope they do, but we'll have to see.
And I think that's where the American people need to get involved. What do you think? I mean, we've got an election in 2 years.
Well, they're involved. They were involved on Election Day.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope the pattern continues.
So,
that's the point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I just find this whole thing
startling. Two more years of Obama and Valerie Jarrett and Susan Rice and Brennan at CIA and John Kerry's flying all over the world, absolutely accomplishing nothing, just like Hillary Clinton. She's never accomplished anything, that I can track that has helped America. I can't identify one thing. So when you have an ineffective State Department, that's what you're going to deal with. And they're not doing what they can to restrict people coming into the country on visas like you were talking about. So I'm not hopeful. I wish I could be more positive and optimistic, but I don't think our federal government at this point in time is going to solve that problem.
Well, I really believe they should take the visa responsibility from State Department, give it to DHS. Look, Foggy Bottom, they have forever thought that the job of State Department and visas was to be meters and greeters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this goes back to my first hearing back in 97 when Mary Ryan, who at the time was in charge of consular affairs, giving out the visas, any suggestion of tightening up on the visa process, and she would give you that cold stare. I mean, if looks could kill, I wouldn't be here now. And that was back in 97.
Yeah. Well, when we did our studies at Stand Up America, our website, by the way, is standupamericaus.org. When we did a study and we found that 47% of the federal government could be done away with tomorrow and we wouldn't miss it. And that includes the Department of Homeland Security. That was a very major mistake by Bush to ever create that monster.
Well, I think he did it in part to blunt the criticism of that female FBI agent who came out and talked about how they weren't investigating the flight schools in Arizona, if you remember that. The agent was Rowley, that young lady with those very big glasses. They look almost big enough to need windshield wipers. And I think right after that, they realized that they had a real PR problem on their hands. And I also think that Bush is a globalist. And so in
sure
configuring...
He is.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I sure is. So was his father.
Yeah. And so, in fact, I did a bunch of hearings over in the House, and I did a hearing before the Senate back then about the creation of this monster. And I just wrote a piece, in fact, for Front Page Magazine about what really needs to be done with Homeland Security. It was purposefully, I think, made unwieldy. They put Customs in charge of immigration, basically. Most of the people that ran immigration came over from customs, where they're concerned about the movement of goods and currency, not people. So they de-emphasized the entire immigration mission. It was George Bush, George W. Bush, who was there when those two Border Patrol agents, Ramos and Compion, got locked up for basically doing their job. So across
exactly
the board,
right.
The message
he
was clear.
He did nothing about getting them released as well.
No.
They were incarcerated
absolutely not.
For a very long time. So
he commuted
Michael,
his sentences.
I've got to leave for another engagement. But,
yeah.
I'll see you next week, hopefully, at the Restoration Weekend.
Paul Valley, I want to thank you for coming on and providing your amazing insight and background. For the folks out there, Paul Valley and I have been invited to speak at the Restoration Weekend, being sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. They also publish Front Page Magazine. Except Paul isn't happy to take airliners. He has to keep rubbing my nose in the fact that he'll be taking a private jet down to Florida a day ahead of me while I fly a cattle car. But I do look forward to getting together with you, Paul, and having some nice warm weather after this Arctic blast heads our way.
Well, I know. I heard it's coming in. But, you know, after my sickness and that bacterial infection I got overseas, I don't care if I go on another commercial airline or go through an American airport again.
I wonder
with all
why.
The disease and, oh, I mean, it's just horrible. The dirt, people from all over, and I hate to be that negative, but I'm going to be very reluctant to fly on commercial airlines anymore.
No, I certainly understand that. Unfortunately, I don't have the friends or the options you do.
Well, it only happens once in a while.
But no, but I got to look, you bust my chops. I have to return the favor, Paul.
That's all right. Well, I appreciate it. Well, listen, take care and good luck, and we'll see you next week.
Travel safely. See you in Florida. Paul Vallely, thank you. That was General Major
okay.
General Paul Vallely, former chief of Special Forces in the Army. Great American, great friend, and certainly still serving America, even though he's no longer with our military. Lots of questions raised this evening. You know, we really need to have a country that has a clear focus. And I got to tell you, folks, there is no clear focus. President Obama goes out there after he gets trounced, his party gets trounced in the election, the very next day goes out there and talks about how he doesn't read political tea leaves. If there was ever a political operative in the White House, and believe me, every president is, I don't care what party, but in particular, President Obama's background, community organizer, has been all about being politically savvy. So for the president to make this assertion, oh, I'll leave reading the tea leaves to the pundits and the journalists and so forth, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. It was the news that he didn't want to hear, I guess, and it was classic President Obama making it clear that no matter what happens, his goal is to conduct business as usual, to ignore the will of the American people, to ignore his responsibilities to secure our country. You cannot protect a country against your enemy if you don't have a defended border. I mean, it's just that simple. Borders are our first and last line of defense against terrorists, against spies, against drug traffickers, against aliens with dangerous diseases. This isn't about race. And the time has really come, folks, for us to stand up and speak out. You know, I'm getting tired, and I've been tired for a long time, about these wacky assertions that seem to have somehow developed a life of their own and gathered credibility, beats me how, that it's anti-immigrant to want to secure the borders and enforce our laws. So let me make the point that I keep on making. I made it when I was in Washington with Progressives for Immigration Reform. I will make this point when I go to Florida next week with David Horowitz. You cannot be legitimately accused of being anti-immigrant when you support the enforcement of our immigration laws, because our immigration laws are not one-sided. They are balanced. Yes, of course, our laws tell us who to keep out and who to kick out. Absolutely. And the criteria, by the way, is not race, religion, or ethnicity. And if you go to the law, And I've said it before, I'm going to be repetitious, but let me say it again. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, enumerates the categories of aliens to be kept out of our country. It starts out with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are prior deportees, aliens who are severely mentally ill and are extremely violent or are sex offenders, convicted felons, bank robbers, murderers, rapists, drug traffickers, human smugglers, gun runners, arsonists, you get the idea. Aliens who are spies or terrorists or human rights violators or war criminals. Those are the categories, folks. And finally, we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge or are likely to work illegally because they have no means of support, and should they work illegally, would then compete unfairly with Americans who would do the same work. And by providing that unfair competition, even Americans who would not lose their jobs to the foreign workers would suffer wage depression, shrinking paychecks, worse working conditions, because this is about supply and demand. If you flood the marketplace with any commodity, and labor is a commodity, then the value of that commodity goes down. If you look at the diamond trade, the De Beers company is very careful about how many diamonds they put out on the market, because they know that if they flooded the market overnight with good quality gemstone diamonds, the price of diamonds would plummet. So they control how many diamonds they put in the marketplace any year so that they keep the value of diamonds up. It's about controlling the price through the control of supply. By dumping, and that's what we're talking about, and economists use the term dumping. When you pump a lot of a particular commodity into the marketplace, I don't care if it's corn, I don't care if it's potatoes, petroleum, doesn't matter, or labor. If you dump that commodity onto the market, you will drive the price down. That's what this is about. This is exactly what it's about. And so you've got a president talking about how I won't do the executive action if Congress does what they need to do to, you know, basically do what he wants. You'll either give me the law that I want or I'll act outside the law by concocting my own executive action. And he talks about how he's doing this legally. It doesn't fly. I'm not a constitutional attorney, but this notion that you can provide lawful status for millions of people and call it prosecutorial discretion is insanity. You know, the law does provide for certain discretion. And prosecutorial discretion does have a place in law enforcement. And we've all experienced it. I'm sure, folks, that if you were out there driving and you notice the speed limit is, you know, 60 miles an hour and you're going 65 miles an hour and it's a sunny day and traffic is moving well and your car is in good shape and you zip through a radar trap and you get that bad feeling, oh my God, I just went through radar. Well, guess what? The cop doesn't come out, doesn't chase you, doesn't give you a ticket because that police officer was exercising appropriate prosecutorial discretion. He or she looked at the road conditions, looked at how you were driving, and said, well, yeah, they're going 6 miles an hour over the speed limit, but you know what? If I wait 5 minutes, someone will come here going 30 miles an hour over the speed limit. While I'm writing someone a ticket for a relatively minor offense, some person that's driving recklessly and dangerously will escape my ability to do anything about it. So I'm going to hold off, and I'm not going to stop anybody who goes less than 10 miles over the limit or whatever it is. And police departments around the country typically do this. They give you a little bit of a margin. They do it out of fairness. I mean, anybody, unless you're on cruise control, can let the speed creep up a bit. And they do it because it's a good way to do business so that you really hold off until you get the person that's driving way over. That's reasonable prosecutorial discretion. And the immigration laws have similar capability or similar provisions. For example, and we used to process people for prosecutorial discretion, what we would do is allow them to stay here. We gave them what was known as deferred action. And the deferred action would be something where perhaps you had a family visiting for Christmas. You know, they came from France, or they came from Jamaica, or they came from Colombia. It doesn't matter what country they came from. They came from Mexico. And their grandmother has a heart attack. Or perhaps the child from that other country visiting with the family has a medical emergency. Are you going to tell the parents and the siblings of the kid in intensive care, oh, you need to go back home to Mexico. We don't care that your child's in the hospital. Of course that's not going to happen. So what we would do is say, okay, the child can stay here legally. You can stay legally. If the situation was so severe that they might need to be here for a lengthy period of time, we might even consider giving them employment authorization temporarily. But it was done on a one-by-one, case-by-case basis. And that's fair, because we've always administered our immigration laws in a compassionate fashion. But for the president to turn around and take a system that was designed to be compassionate and turn it into yet another political machine, the man who doesn't read the tea leaves, and say, oh, we're going to give hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens temporary lawful status under that same concept. And, oh, we're going to say it's about children because all they have to do is claim they came here before they were 15, but they could be as old as 31 when they apply. How do you even begin to prove how old that person was when they came here when you realize there's no capacity to do a face-to-face interview, let alone conduct a field investigation? So pretty soon the aliens find out, either with an attorney or from word of mouth with their buddies, what they need to say. So they know that they have to say they came here before their 15th or 16th birthday, and they know what else they need to put on paper, and whatever it is they have to say, they say it. It's kind of like the old speakeasies during Prohibition in the Roaring 20s. You know, they would go down there and they'd bang on the door and they had a certain knock, you know, knock three times and tell them Harry sent you. And that's the way they're filling out the applications. Well, it makes a mockery of the legal system, but it also makes a mockery of the 9/11 Commission report. It makes a mockery of people who've properly come through the system as well. So now we have millions of people waiting online, rushing the border, anticipating that sooner or later they will get what drove them across the border. And it's not citizenship, by the way. The majority of illegal aliens have absolutely no intention to become American citizens. So then the narrative from both the Democrat and Republican Party is to say, oh, we're going to put them on the back of the line. I remember watching Hannity, and there was a politician on, it was a town hall meeting, and the politician said, we're going to put these people on the back of the line. And the whole audience went nuts. I mean, they had just been served red meat. It was as though they had all been told that when they go home from the TV studio, there would be a candy apple red Corvette convertible sitting in their driveway registered to them. It was absurd. We're going to put them on the back of the line. Boy, does that sound great or what? And nobody asked, well, where is the line? And back of the line to what? Back of the line to come to the United States? No. That's in place, and you shouldn't be here if you're on the back of that line. Back of the line so that you're going to be sent back home and be told to wait your turn? No. Back of the line for citizenship. Wow. So we're telling these folks, we'll put you on the back of the line for something you don't want anyway, but while you're waiting online, just so you keep busy, you can work, you can travel freely around the United States, you can send money home. In most cases, you can bring family members here, but remember, you're on the back of the line. See, there is such deceptive language being used in the immigration debate, and now we're hearing it from the news media. Oh, we have to accommodate these folks. It's good for the economy. And no one says, well, how is it good for the economy? How is it good for American workers who can't find work now if suddenly another 20 or 30 million foreign workers are given an equal standing in the labor pool with American unemployed workers? Is that good for America or Americans? I mean, it's nuts. And then they say, well, we're going to secure the border first. Secure what border where? Go to Front Page Magazine. Read the article that I wrote. I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. And basically, the notion is we're going to secure the Mexican border. Well, really, if you looked at the law that the Republicans signed off on last year, their effort at border security, it was 90% operational control over the high traffic areas of the border. What in the world is operational control? What's a high traffic area? And what happens when the smugglers move their operation 10 miles to the east or west so they're no longer in a high traffic area? There's a movie you folks really need to see. I've talked about it before. I'm going to talk about it again. It's My Favorite Price. You can see it for free. There it is, folks, My Favorite Price, free. It's called The Border States of America, produced by the Tea Party Patriots. My good friend Mark Hager, history professor from North Carolina, was the force behind the film. I'm very proud to appear in this film, but that's not why I want you to see it. You all know what my ugly mug looks like already, and you certainly get to hear my voice often enough. You don't need to see it because of me, but you do need to see it because of the information that's contained in the film. I'm just proud to be a part of it. They interviewed Senator Jeff Sessions, and my God, I would love for Jeff Sessions to run for president. I'd finally get a night's sleep. They interviewed Louie Gohmert, a member of Congress from Texas. They interviewed Congressman Steve King from Iowa. I've met all three of these men. They're good leaders, and I'm a registered Democrat, but as Paul Vallee, General Vallee, so rightfully pointed out, this notion of conservative, liberal, what it doesn't matter. We need to be Americans. We need to come together as Americans. This divide and conquer strategy is a bunch of crap. It's got to stop. We need to be first and foremost Americans. But when you look at this movie, when you watch this 58-minute film, and I'm asking you, please go watch it this weekend. It's extremely well made. They got an actor by the name of Nick Searcy to be the narrator. He takes you on this journey along the border. You will not believe what is going on down there if you haven't seen this film. And so Nick Searcy guides you on this tour, and you'll see what passes for a secure border. It's a joke. It's frightening. It's terrifying. They interview border sheriffs and ranchers, and they all paint the same picture. And they talk about the dead bodies, people that don't make it here, people that get here and die because the smugglers just leave them out there to die because they can't keep up. I mean, the tragedies keep playing out every single day. Women are getting raped, people are dying, people are getting beaten up, drugs are coming across the border, and many people, not looking to wash dishes, are coming across the border, but people, in fact, from special interest countries, countries that sponsor terrorism, are coming across the border. And meanwhile, we have a war on terror with an open door. We're going to protect you from home invaders, but we're going to leave the doors and windows open at night. This is madness. As General Vallee said, it's an act of national suicide. There is no other way to describe it. And it was really impressive to me how many Americans came out and voted this past week. How many Americans must have crossed party lines because they understood what was going on. But the Republicans should not take much comfort because the votes weren't for them, but against Obama and his policies. That's very different. That's very different. I am sure there are plenty of Americans who voted for Republicans and held their nose because they said, well, I don't like Republicans, but I hate the Democrats this year. And I'm a registered Democrat. I mean, this is madness. And you have President Obama showing nothing but utter contempt for the system, for America, for Americans, this constitutional professor talking about how he's going to do it legally. Do what legally? Allow millions of people who evaded an inspections process that's supposed to keep out terrorists and criminals and all sorts of foreign nationals who have no inherent right to come here and give them the permission to not only stay here but work? And perhaps bring their family here and make a mockery of our borders and a mockery of our laws. I got to tell you, this is one bell that cannot be unrung. If he does this, the damage will be unbelievable. We are talking about a threat to national security. It's astonishing. And the Republicans are so afraid to tell what it's really going to do to this country. You know, Boehner gets up there. Well, you know, you're playing with fire. Okay. Why not get the words out, Mr. Speaker? You're playing with the lives and the survival of America and Americans. Terrorists need to come here to be able to attack us. That was one of the primary statements in the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. That concept was right there in the first couple of sentences of the preface of the report issued by the staff of the 9/11 Commission. These were agents and federal attorneys. And they said, you know, basically, it goes without saying that terrorists can't attack us if they can't get here. So they're here. You heard what General Valley said about the Iranians, about Hezbollah, about the shock troops, about ISIS. And by not being out on the street, the agents I'm talking about now, looking for people who are violating our borders and our immigration laws, and when you do that, and I've written an article that will be published on the capsweb.org website. I've been told it should be up on Monday. I won't be on the radio next Friday, by the way. I will be in Florida, but I will be back in 2 weeks. But I will send out an email to those of you who are on my list. It will be up on my website, michaelcutler.net. It will be on capsweb.org, talking about how the lack of intelligence that we suffer because we're not enforcing the law. It's a lack of intelligence and integrity to not enforce the law, but we're also losing intelligence, as in operational intelligence, so that we know what's going on. You have no idea how many times a police officer stops somebody for speeding and finds out the person is the subject of a warrant. You have no idea how many times we would arrest somebody for being an illegal alien and find out that that person had an involvement with a criminal organization, and in some instances, with a terrorist organization. I arrested an individual who was suspected of being involved with the Irish Republican Army. We took a gun off of him. If you're not out there, this is like the lottery. You've got to be in it to win it. Basically, any alien that can get past the border or get past that inspector at a port of entry is home free. This is crazy. This is madness. This is undermining our survival, national security, public safety. And yet the Republicans keep looking at this as a political issue, not as the national security issue that it is. What's with that? How in the world do they not understand it? How in the world do they not come out and say it? Because, you see, they're beholden to the Chamber of Commerce. Remember, it was Reagan who gave us the first amnesty. It was Reagan who didn't hire any more agents to help us enforce the laws. Both sides of the aisle. George W. Bush sent Border Patrol agents to secure the Iraqi border, left our border wide open. Both sides of the aisle. What happened on Election Day this week needs to continue to happen, ladies and gentlemen. You need to be making the phone calls. Call your congressmen, call your senators, call your governors and your mayors, and tell them, listen, you are putting our lives, our families' lives in jeopardy. The drugs coming across the border are coming across the border because there is no border. It's a speed bump at best. And I was listening to the campaign and the politicians arguing over whether or not it makes sense to limit the size of magazines and handguns and all this business about the Second Amendment. Folks, if you want to go after the violence, go after the gangs, go after the narcotics. America today is awash in heroin and cocaine. It's those drugs that fuel the violence. It's the gangs that peddle that garbage that create so much of the violence. We now have more gang members in America than the number of sworn police officers. Now, yes, it's true that a good percentage of the gang members are American citizens. But it's also true that a good chunk of those gang members shouldn't be here. They're here illegally. And, you know, every politician talks about the need to create jobs. And when they run for office, I don't care if it's dog catcher, everybody says the same thing. If elected, I will create the jobs. I will bring jobs to the city. I will bring jobs to this state. Right. It takes a long time to create jobs. You have to have a concept, You have to really flesh it out. Then you have to go to the people with the money and convince them to invest, go to the bank and get the loan, and then you get the money and you get to build the facility, and finally you get to hire people. Folks, that process can take months or years. Do you know how you can get people working, Americans working tomorrow morning? Enforce the immigration laws. There are millions of foreign nationals working in violation of law in the United States right now. There are many aliens taking high-tech jobs, and they're here, quote-unquote, legally, but the way that the visas were issued to them leaves an awful lot to be desired. They got away by gaming the system, in effect committing fraud. If we could get rid of the foreign workers who should not be working in the United States, we could liberate millions of jobs overnight. Overnight. Nobody would have to spend a lot of money. Yeah, the government would have to deport these people. That's true. They'd have to hire some judges and get these people out of here. But when you look at the money they're sending home, money that would not be leaving the country if they weren't here working. If you look at the wage suppression of American workers, if you look at the high number of Americans who are not working at all, Americans who, through no fault of their own, have gone from being middle-class, tax-paying consumers to people living below the poverty line, taking money out of the government nest egg, and I don't vilify them. I listen to some of the folks on the very conservative programs, oh, those lazy Americans, my backside. Many of these people have worked for 30 years. They didn't wake up lazy yesterday, folks. They woke up unemployed. They were screwed by the companies they worked for because they were replaced by foreign workers. So they go from being tax-paying, middle-class people contributing to the economy, living out their thin sliver of an American dream. They're now living below the poverty line. Their kids are in trouble. They're living in tough times, and they're depending on government money. And they're not paying taxes, and they don't have any disposable income, so they can't buy anything. They can't go to Atlantic City. Why do you think Atlantic City is going belly up? So we're being told that the solution to all this is to do what? Legalize millions more? And then, you know, you can listen to this on the conservative programs also. The president engaged in race politics. Well, he did. So what? Every journalist, left or right, doesn't matter, who talks about the Latino vote is doing the same thing. You mean Latinos have different goals than the rest of America? Could you have more more discriminatory conversation than that? Somehow Latinos favor lawlessness? This is nutty. It's insulting. It's infuriating. It's disgusting. It's everything negative. It's a kind of profiling that defies comprehension. Don't tell me that if you know the guy's last name or that young lady's last name is Rodriguez or Garcia, that that's all you need to know about them. When I hear this nonsense about the black vote, the Latino vote, the Jewish vote, give me a break, folks. We're Americans. We're Americans. So to run around insulting Americans, telling everybody, oh, yeah, well, the Latinos want open borders. The Latinos want lawlessness. Could you be more insulting than that? And what's incredible is you have groups that purport to represent Latinos who make the same wacky claims. Ethnic criminals, whether it's the Russian mob, Asian organized crime, the Colombian cartels, the Jamaican drug posse, where do you think these people all set up shop? Do you think the Russians are setting up shop in Chinatown? I doubt it. You know, look, let's get serious here. Generally, transnational criminals set up shop in the communities where the people are most like themselves for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're most comfortable there. They speak the language. They like the food. They like the music. They like the women. They especially like the women. So where are they going to live? They live among people just like themselves, and that helps to conceal them also. They become that veritable needle in the haystack. So when drug dealers and fugitives from justice from other countries get into the United States, the people most likely to suffer violence other people of the same ethnicity. So if we're talking about a South American drug gang, it's the people within the ethnic South American immigrant communities who are most at risk. Same thing about the Caribbeans. Same thing about the Russians and the Asians, the Europeans. Doesn't matter. Every ethnic group, every, there's no exception, have the good, the bad, and the ugly. I don't care what flavor you are. The Italian mafia isn't just about being Italian. Of course it isn't. We have Asian organized crime. We have the Israeli mob, the Russian mob. Name the flavor of the month. This is human nature, and at the end of the day, we're all humans with the same strengths and same weaknesses. So how in the world is it anti-Latino to say, look, we need to make certain that people don't evade the inspections process designed to keep out people who pose a threat to our safety and well-being? That's all that this is about. So the other side knows that what I'm saying is accurate. They know it's truthful. And they know that if people listen to this, they won't get what they want. And what do they want? They want to bring in people that will give them money, that will further their political power. This is all about money and power, folks. That's all that this is about. And the saddest thing is that the people who claim to be helping the ethnic immigrant communities most of the time are doing the very opposite by taking a position of advocacy for lawlessness within that community. How is this in the best interest of that community? That's like saying that if you're trying to feed mice, the best way to do it is to put cheese on a mousetrap. Really? I was told that it was the Three Stooges who did a little routine where there was water leaking into the boat, and one of the Three Stooges went to the back of the boat and started drilling another hole and then said, when I drill that other hole, the water will go out. I mean, that's the kind of reasoning we're talking about. We have too many workers, not enough jobs. The obvious solution is bring in more workers. Unbelievable. We're worried about criminals going into communities. So what do we need to do? Make it easier for the criminals to get here. And then accuse the people who say anything about it of being anti-immigrant and hate mongers. It defies belief. But what also defies belief is that supposed adults, journalists and politicians are drinking the Kool-Aid, not with one straw, but two straws. And they are our leaders. Or they are the people we depend on for the news of the day. It leaves me shaking my head. It leaves me shaking my head. You know, it's been said that, we get the government we deserve. Finally, the American people have basically told everybody we've had enough. So the Democrats were routed out of the leadership in both houses now. What will the Republicans do now? What will they do? Will they go off the deep end and have a celebratory deal and say, okay, now we're large and in charge. The Chamber of Commerce is putting billions of dollars along with Zuckerberg and Gates and all these people that want open borders. We're going to give them what they want. And we'll have a make-believe fight with the White House like they did with the eight gangsters. Or are they going to look at this and say, wait a minute. In 2016, just 2 years from now, the White House is up for grabs. The Democrats no longer have an incumbent. This is anything goes, folks. They better understand. The American people are really starting to take politics seriously. You know, I've written pieces about it. I'm going to make the point. It's my contention that you cannot be a good parent unless you're involved with the political process. Good parents do everything in their power to raise their children well. When the woman is pregnant, she takes prenatal vitamins and goes to the doctor and gets the best care, and they go to a good hospital on delivery day, and they take care of the baby, and they treasure the child and the food and the clothing, and everything is the best for the baby. And then they want the kid to go to the best school, and they want a kid to go to the best class, and they try to provide an enriched environment, whether it's playing music or whatever is in fashion, because they want their child to have every opportunity for success. That's what good parents do. It's what my parents did. It's what I did with my children. I know it's what my son is doing with his wife, and my little granddaughter. Everybody wants their child to have every opportunity. And I know the conservatives say, oh, the government doesn't create jobs. That's up to the private sector. And there's a measure of truth. We could have that debate. But it's the federal government's responsibility to make certain that when jobs are created in America, that Americans and those who are lawfully entitled to work in the United States get those jobs. It doesn't matter if you create a million new jobs if Americans don't get those jobs, folks. That's the role of immigration. Prior to the Second World War, immigration was the responsibility of the Labor Department for just that reason. So my point is that you can do what you want to do with that child. Give that child the best of everything, and piano lessons and skiing lessons, and keep their dance card full after school with play dates. And then when the child gets a bit older, make certain that you really give them good values and good moral senses, and send them off to a good college. And, wow, you do everything you can. But if we're left vulnerable because of a government that won't protect us from criminals and terrorists and dangerous diseases, if we have a government that's happy to let in cheap foreign labor to undermine American workers, then what's the point to the education? What happens to all that money, all that time, all that love that's been invested in a child to give that child every opportunity when that child's opportunity is stolen by our own government? Our own government doing the bidding of some pretty nasty, selfish, greedy bums like Zuckerberg and Gates and Silicon Valley and all the usual suspects. You have the politicians telling us on the one hand, well, we've got to import the best and brightest from around the world because our schools are incapable. And then three sentences later, those same politicians turn around and say, however, when foreign students go to those schools, we should be stapling green cards onto their diplomas. When you hear that, you know that the politician saying it is full of you-know-what. Don't tell me that those schools are incapable when the American kids go there, but suddenly foreign students are getting first-rate educations that are so wonderful that we need to keep those foreign students here who went to the same schools where when the American kids go to those schools, they just don't cut the mustard any longer. You have Chuck Schumer, and before him Bloomberg, screaming about people trespassing. Bloomberg's pet thing were the criminals trespassing in the housing projects in the Bronx. Schumer's been jumping up and down like a pogo stick. I guess he saw a camera somewhere, screaming about the people who trespassed on the Brooklyn Bridge and took down the American flag and put up the white flags, the people who trespassed on the Manhattan Bridge and put up the Palestinian flag, the guys that jumped off the Trade Center. And he says, oh, this is dangerous. They're trespassing. You know why they're trespassing? You know why they're trespassing? Because the penalties aren't strong enough. The law says it's a one-year crime, and they're usually getting 3 months in jail. Schumer said this. He says, what you need to do is make it a five-year felony, and that's what he's proposing, that trespassing carries 5 years in jail, and he demands that the law enforcement authorities arrest trespassers and hit them with the book, throw the book at them, give them 5 years in jail, and trespassing will stop. Wait a minute, Chucky baby. Wait one cotton picking second. Aliens who run the border, at least in theory, no one even has any clue anymore what the numbers are, but it had been quote-unquote conventional wisdom that 60% of the illegals in this country had run the border, had trespassed on America. And Chucky is out there going, the system is broke, the system is broke. Right, the sky is falling, Chicken Little. Now, the system isn't broken. The problem was that aliens were running the border and they weren't being punished for it. Just like the guy that jumped off the Trade Center, just like the people that took down the American flag on the Brooklyn Bridge. The penalties weren't strong enough. The certainty of being caught wasn't there. The certainty of punishment wasn't there. Chucky Baby, Chuck Schumer, one of the eight gangsters, Gang of Eight, however you want to put it, got it right. The way you stop trespassing is to increase the penalties, make the arrests, and make certain that the person who commits that offense pays the price, goes to jail. Why don't we hear that being used the same way when people trespass on America? Why did Bloomberg want to put people in jail for trespassing on public housing projects, but turned around and wanted to give the keys to the city to aliens who trespass on America? The disconnect is unbelievable. And you watch this debate between John Boehner and Obama, and no, I didn't mispronounce his name. That's just how I feel about what he's doing. It leaves me angry. It leaves me angry. I lived through 9/11. I had testified about the dangers of visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud 4.5 years before 9/11. My neighbors died on 9/11, and I'm tired of the nonsense. If we were really serious about immigration, what's broken is the moral compass of the leadership from both parties. That's what's broken. Schumer's right. I mean, I hate admitting it, but he was right. If you don't want people trespassing, increase the penalties, make the arrests, and hit them over the head with the law. And say you're going to jail for X number of years, people will stop doing it. And they will stop doing it along our borders, northern, southern, seaports. You need to hire the agents, you need to invest the time and the money and the effort, and you need to send a clear message. Violate our borders, violate our laws, there are consequences. And if you're going to talk about mandatory E-Verify, and I agree with it, that's meaningless if Obama gives everybody employment authorization, because that magic card that they will be getting from this administration, if Obama has his corrupt way, will get those people right through the E-Verify process. It doesn't much matter. You got to go after the fraud. You got to look at immigration as a system. That was why I wrote that article for Front Page Magazine, and I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. We're being sold an absurd concept, and people are buying the nonsense. And I'm listening to it on TV every night, and I'm tired of it. And what are they saying? Once we secure the border, well, what in the world does the border along the Mexican-U.S. line have to do with the Canadian border or the seaports or the way aliens are coming here under the visa waiver program and disappearing? Or people lying on their applications and getting away with it. Those are all holes in that colander. And all of those holes need to be plugged. Not one, not two. We need to look at this as a systemic failure. So when I hear this nonsense, well, of course we're going to secure the border first. And you watch TV, and who do they have on talking about immigration? Radio talk show hosts and political pundits, political, you know, strategists. It's remarkable. When they wanted to talk about military action, they brought in people like General Paul Vallely, who I'm very pleased joined me on my program earlier this evening. They didn't bring in a guy who drew comic book cartoons. You bring in a general. When there's a plane crash, you don't bring in a talk show host. You bring in engineers and pilots. The Ebola outbreak, did they bring in pundits? They brought in epidemiologists and doctors. Why then, when they talk about immigration, do they think it makes sense to have talk show hosts from radio come on and talk about it? Where's their credibility? Where's their creds? What are their credentials? What gives them knowledge that's worth sharing with anybody? We're trivializing what this all means, even after 9/11, even after the 9/11 Commission report. The fire that we are playing with, folks, is the same flame that John Boehner is playing with. And it's a disconnect from reality. This notion that immigration is minor. The notion when they said, oh, the polls say that 48% of Americans voting say that the economy and unemployment is the issue. Immigration only came in at something like 18%. Well, wait a minute. If we got rid of all the foreign workers, both illegal aliens and aliens who game the visa process to get temporary work visas or student visas and then given practical training, if we cleared that mess up, what would that look like in terms of our economy, our balance of payment with the remittances no longer flowing out of our economy, and Americans getting the jobs and the decent wages that they desperately need so they can support themselves and their families. See, it's never explained that way. So they talk about how the American people are worried about the economy. They talk about the threat of terrorism and crime. Okay, heroin isn't produced in the United States. Cocaine isn't produced. That's another failure, another example of failures of border security. But nobody ever says that. So immigration, 18%, it comes in, 8, 9, whatever it is. Not a big deal. Really? Really? We don't need to create jobs as badly as we need America to liberate the jobs. And that's the work of DHS, an agency that's so thoroughly screwed up, I've come to call the Department of Homeland surrender. This nonsense that immigration is just about race is the biggest lie in the world. Graceful is that supposed journalist is spewing this garbage on the airwaves. Journalists are supposed to be fact finders. They're supposed to deal in the truth. They're supposed to deal in the truth. There is no truth to those statements, folks. It's propaganda and it's manipulation, and it's not reporting on the news. You've got the journalists making the news by twisting the way people understand the issues. I want you to all think about it. If we can't secure the border and we can't keep criminals and terrorists out of our country, what then is the mission for our military? Our mission, the military's primary mission, is to keep America's enemies as far from our shores as possible. If they're here, what can the military do then? The military is supposed to keep the enemy as far from us as possible, but when the aliens involved with terrorism and crime manage to get to the border, DHS is supposed to pick up the slack and take over, kind of like the way air traffic controllers hand off an airplane. Okay, military, you couldn't stop them, so we'll take care of it. It's like the outfield in a baseball game. The batter gets up, hits the ball, and it goes into the outfield. Okay. You have outfielders. For national security, the outfield is DHS. DHS is missing in action. Misdirected, misled, understaffed. This is a crisis. This is a crisis. And you would have thought after the terror attacks of 93 and after 9/11 that we'd finally get it right. We did a great job on Election Day, folks. We the people need to keep up our work. We need to keep up the pressure. We need to keep reminding these politicians that their successes will be short-lived indeed, because already, within the next few weeks, the campaigns for 2016 are going to start to gear up. And we need, as a steady drumbeat, to remind our elected representatives that if they fail to act in the best interests of America or Americans, that they too can be removed. Carry around some pink slips with you, folks. We may find some politicians worthy of them. I thank you so much for joining me this Friday evening, as always. As I said, next week I will be out of town in Florida, hopefully where it will be warmer than New York, looking at this polar vortex. Sounds like a monster movie. The polar vortex is headed this way. But I do hope you will be joining me in 2 weeks. But meanwhile, again, the websites I very much want you to go visit. Please visit capsweb.org, michaelcutler.net, Front Page Magazine, and Progressives for Immigration Reform. Happy to have written an article for them. They published it this morning. There should be a video up on their website within the next couple of days of the conference in Washington when I delivered my policy brief, and it was a pretty long paper. I was very proud of it, and I called it the liberal case for effective immigration law enforcement. And I will make the same point now that I made in my paper. This is not about left or right, but about right or wrong. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for joining me, and I want you to remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend, and stay warm.